Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 3, Episode 22, Play with Fire. Original air date is May 8th, 2003. Director Kenneth Fink, writers Anthony E. Zeiker, Naren Shankar, and Andrew Lipsitz. And we begin with shots of the Vegas Strip before we go to a field. And I did talk to Nick about this ahead of time. I was like, is this a callback to the episode where the cheerleader gets eaten?
Yes.
I did some research.
Season 3, this season, episode 3. Yeah. I rewatched the clips and the reenactment. And I do not believe it is the same field.
Okay, unless they not the same field.
Recolored the bleachers, which I guess is possible.
But I would say that's more possible if we were talking seasons apart. But the fact that they're like in the same season, like that would be a lot of work in within like one season's shooting schedule. Unlikely.
But I actually thought it was funny because I actually also thought there was a scene under the bleachers in the episode, and there is not. Because they're like doing drugs and making out in the middle of the field.
And the girl
walks over.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a different team name on the sign. So, okay, you know, who knows? Set designers do all sorts of stuff. So
that's true. That is true.
But it just looks like generic. My guess is around LA, there's 10 of those fields. And they just another field and use that one.
Yeah, no, I think you're right entirely. So before we continue onto this field and our first storyline, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Very close to a maximum Vegas score.
There was a lot of there was a lot of intercutting shots.
Yeah. Back to having some scenes at the beginning, four scenes, quite a bit. We ended up at a 52.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
LII.
So close.
Not quite LV.
Yeah, not quite LV, but almost there. Okay. So we go to this field. There's some teenagers there. They're underneath the bleachers. They're making out. They decide to go to an announcer box, which kind of kills the mood because they find a body. But before we go further, Nick, do you want to take claim for this
one? Yes. We have a spot the guest star. Spot the guest star, I would say, for me.
Yes.
Credited as Girl.
Girl, yes, that is.
Opposite of Boy, I believe.
I mean, to be fair, one of my Spot the Guest Stars last episode was
Left Girl.
Left Girl, right Girl. Yeah. So,
yeah, this is Danielle Panabaker, who 150-ish plus episodes probably on The Flash, hit CW TV show. Also, many pictures of Caitlin Snow and the entire Barry Allen Flash people on my work computer, because I used the Flash squad as my fake test group and on some of the software systems at work in our test environment, where you have to like make accounts and people have to have relationships. You just steal relationships from the TV show. So yeah, a bunch of random Flash accounts in my company's systems in the test environment. So yeah, not only am I familiar with, that's probably like my favorite CW cartoon comic book TV show, which is probably why I used it, but also basically one of the primary cast members from season one. So yeah, I saw the face in the very opening season, you know, in their like dark shadow. I went, that person looks familiar. Then they get inside
and they do building, like a close up on her face.
It's well lit. Yeah. Very similar. I have another Spot the Guest Star later where the first time the characters in the episode, I did not recognize they were. And then in bright lighting, it was like, oh, I know this person. And then I knew exactly where I knew them from as well, which is always cool.
Yeah. So I think I do recognize her from The Flash, but I am not as avid of a watcher as Nick is, but she was also in a few episodes of Bones, and I do think that I remember her from that as well. So I had a similar thing where it was like the first scene nothing really sparked, but then when they like close it on her face when she's shocked to find the body, I was like, I know that face. That face looks familiar. So that is our first Spot the Guest Star.
And very like one of the first things this actress was ever in. So
yes, this is like one of her earliest young. This is one of her earliest credits is this episode. Girl.
We all gotta start somewhere.
This is true.
I'm sure she was in an episode of Law and Order at some point too.
Probably. Most likely. We stay in the announcer box, but now Jim Brass, Grissom, Nick, and David are on scene. There are signs that the victim was strangled. They are wondering if she was sexually assaulted. She is not wearing underwear, so possibly. Grissom finds a small wound from the door on her leg. And then he starts, like his brain, again, this is like this would be like the gears turning in the brain if we had like little cartoons like represent how people were feeling. Grissom is like, we need to take her liver temp right now, and essentially like yells at David to take her liver temp, which he does, and it's 98.1, meaning that she has been dead for less than 1 hour.
I do believe this is a good no gloves Grissom moment as well, where he is glovelessly touching the door, checking for the blood on the door. And I was like, wait a second, you're standing over a dead body. Mm-hmm, you're investigating her the first time and you're not wearing gloves.
Nope. Who needs gloves?
I feel like the actors just decide when they show up.
Yeah. Like, do I want to wear gloves today? Do I want my hands to be sweaty or not? Out. It's kind of hot. I don't think I want to wear them. So we gloveless, gloveless Grissom leads us into credits.
No finger man.
Yeah, just no. His hearing loss comes up in this episode. I think it'd be very difficult for him to do his job if he had no fingers. So,
I mean, I'm sure he could do it. I'm
sure he could do it.
You know,
accommodations could be made.
I feel like there's reasonable. I'm sure that's a job somebody could do without fingers. However, it would be hard to hide that from your coworkers.
Yes, this is very true. It would be very difficult.
Might have to be a little bit more honest.
Yeah, it might have to be a little bit more forthright about that one. We come back from credits. We have Nick running with a bag. He comes back into the announcer booth. They set up a fume tent. They're hoping to get prints because the crime scene is so fresh, and they do get a print or part of a print from her ankle. We return to HQ. Catherine and Warwick having a nice little walk and talk. They are talking about a case that for this scene, we're like, oh, this is going to be storyline B.
Story. Yeah, yeah. Same thing.
Spoiler alert, not the B story. And they go
Does
to log evidence.
Does it count as a C story? I guess not, because they never come back.
They reference it at near the very end.
They don't try to like solve it.
They don't try to solve it. They essentially go, we can't solve it. Whoops. And then that's how much attention this case gets. So they're about to log evidence, but they can't log evidence. So they store this container of liquid in the lab. They continue talking, though. We learn that Lindsay has been caught fighting at school. So she's having a rough go, which it makes sense. Her father died tragically not that long ago. So
we haven't really got like a storyline update on Lindsay or Catherine. So I'm glad it was in this episode. You know, we're getting to the end of the season.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty big thing that happened this season.
A pretty major plot point is Eddie dying. So
as someone who lost a parent when they were young, it's, you know, a pretty major life event. So I think that it was good that they came back to it.
And yes.
They class very stereotypic. Oh yeah. Fighting in school, acting out kind of thing. But like, you know, it's they're acknowledging it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that it at least got brought up, even if it got brought up in a stereotypical way. Yeah,
which happens too, like, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, that's how some kids work out how they're feeling.
Yeah, or just like, I think one thing I could say is that many years later, not related to the loss of a parent, but there was definitely a point in my life where I just think that being frustrated by other things just made you like want to fight somebody. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like elevate a situation to violence faster, like
than it would have
a clear head. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, that's, you know, that's really a lot of times what it comes down to is that you're not dealing with your emotions and you know, you end up turning to violence instead of just like getting over something or
like processing it. And,
you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Talking things out.
Yeah. I mean, we don't often set up children with the tools to like properly work through their emotions. So not blaming kiddos in this instance. We are back with storyline A, though. Nick and Sarah with a car. Nick finds a pair of ripped up panties. There's also evidence that sex happened in the back seat of said car. Sarah finds a ceramics ? Maybe.
Yeah.
And we learn in this scene that Hodges is working Trace, and we get confirmation that Nick does not like Hodges.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's like, oh, that kiss ass.
There's like another scene where we like thought maybe they like skipped an episode where like they like hated each other.
It was the first time that Nick and Hodges were in a scene together. And it was like, what? Why do they hate each other? Yeah. We don't know. Yeah, they didn't earn this sort of like disdain between one another. But now they're continuing that thread, even though it should have started earlier. At least they're expanding upon it, which I do appreciate.
I was going to tell you a fun fact is that I am currently holding a tiny piece of porcelain like item that happens to be a piece of my tooth that chipped off a filling.
Oh no.
Right before Thanksgiving. And then like thought like, oh, and there's no, there's still a big hole in my tooth. And they're like, oh, you're not in pain. And so they schedule it. It's like in the middle of January. It's like two months after.
That's not good.
They're just like, you'll be fine. I was like, oh.
I feel like bacteria and stuff can get in there.
The tooth is still protected and the nerve is there. They're like, just brush and, you know, clean your mouth out, mouthwash, those kind of things. And, you know, if you start to feel pain, come see us and, you know, we'll get you in. But otherwise, like, you know, it's holidays. Everyone's busy, I guess.
Everyone's busy. Or they're like me and they have a week off from work. So they're just like,
So I immediately was like, oh, that's a piece of a tooth. I know.
I have a sample. I've been there very recently. I have firsthand knowledge of this. So I will admit that I thought it was a tooth to begin with, but not, I think I just, maybe I just remembered this episode enough that I remembered it was a tooth.
Yeah.
But we then have Grissom. He's with Doc Robbins. We learn that the victim died of asphyxiation due to strangulation. And this was like direct strangulation. Like someone used their hand to strangle her, used their right hand to strangle her. This was not like rope or a tie or, you know, some other tool. This was just a hand.
He says there are like no ligature marks, which is, you know, which would be like a rope or I think we had an extension cord at some point.
Yep.
But also he mentions how through like, I don't know if he says a carotid artery or whatever, like extended pressure on that. So that's basically how you suffocate somebody by denying their brain oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah. We also learn in this scene that there are indications that the victim had rough sex, but was not raped.
Yes.
So they did the clock exam, which they did talk about in an earlier episode. And at least from this indication, rape was not inflicted upon the victim. We then have Jim Brass and Nick at a motel. This is where the victim, Allison Carpenter, was staying. She had requested the week off from work. She was like vacationing here. And I had to note, I am AFAB. I'm non-binary, but I am AFAB. And I think most generally speaking, I present as female. And they were talking about the fact that this woman was like vacationing in Vegas by herself. And they were like, so weird, a single woman on vacation alone by herself in Vegas. And I was like, I just was alone by myself in Vegas on a vacation. Are you going to come investigate me, CSI? I mean, I was there for a Star Trek convention, but I was still technically vacationing in Vegas by my lonesome.
The person who cuts my hair regularly, I know factually that she's in a long-term relationship. And I don't remember if they're engaged or married or whatever. But talk about travel sometimes when I'm getting my hair cut. And I know for a fact that she prefers to do stuff alone sometimes. It's just a thing some people like to do.
I sort of like by necessity, but traveled by myself. And then I learned I really like to travel by myself. Yeah. I don't mind traveling with other people too. Like, it's not like the only time I travel. I only ever want to travel by myself. But there are some perks to traveling by yourself.
Yeah, there's benefits, or sometimes like, I don't know, people need me time, alone time. Yeah. And sometimes that doesn't mean stay at home. That means go and do something. So,
But I just thought it was fun. Like, I just thought it was funny. I just was like, calling me out,
timey.
CSI. It is very old timey. Like, oh, this single woman by herself. Like, whatever is she doing? And stop. Single women can do what they want on their own. But we then go to A. Hodges and Grissom walk and talk. And Hodges does exactly what Nick said he was going to do and goes to Grissom to give him the results instead of going to Nick and Sarah. And Grissom the entire time is like, tell Nick and Sarah. They are the ones that you need to be giving these results to. But
I like this scene a lot because initially Grissom is like, have you talked to Nick and Sarah? And then Hodges is like, no. But then he's like, Hodges knows that if he, like, Grissom wants to know the answer. And so he like just like gives a BS excuse. Oh, he also tries to like throw him on the bus. Like, oh, they must be on another break. You know?
Yes, like, he does. I was like, Hodges. Don't play that game.
But then Grissom listens to him. And he's like, okay. But then at the end, he goes, okay, that's cool. Now go tell Nick and Sarah. Yeah, right. But so, like, he wanted to know and he listened.
He wanted to know.
He indulged himself, but that he did the right supervisory thing, which I think is an important precursor to the end of this episode, where you have to consider the role and the appropriate behaviors of a supervisor.
This is true. So Grissom does learn in this scene, though, that the ceramic is a dental crown, as we discussed, and that there's also traces of methadone. So person with the victim, probably on methadone.
It's a interesting like side product, but I just want to call out that it's meth for later on when there's a meth related spot the guest star.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We'll get there. So we have Grissom with Jackie. She is mapping features on the partial print. She in so doing, whittles down the potential matches to about 19. She's going to check them by hand. Greg Sanders enters. He's like, hey, I have crazy news. The DNA that we pulled belongs to Jason Kent, a.k.a. the Circle Killer. So that brings Jim Brass, Grissom, and an officer to Kent's apartment. And so we're introduced to Jason Kent. We learn that it looks like he bit his lip. He clipped his nails. Grissom goes into his bathroom, finds his clippers. There's like a little piece of skin in there. So there's some pieces that are starting to come together that don't lend themselves to Jason Kent looking great.
They don't need a warrant because of his in conditions of parole. So
yeah, because normally we will call out Jim Brass when he is overreaching and asking for things that he really should use a warrant for, but he doesn't need to in this instance.
Or they have like a, I don't know what the rules are, but
a blanket warrant or something.
Yeah, they have the ability to do as long as they inform his parole officers.
Yeah.
I don't really know how it works, but I'm sure it's something either. Along that line.
Thankfully, I've never been on parole, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, they say I understand the conditions of my release. Like you,
yeah.
Do whatever.
Yeah. So then we go to Sarah. She is starting to eat a sandwich. We then have this, like, I don't know quite how to describe it, but this like sequence of events wherein Sarah is following Grissom. Grissom is unaware that he is being followed. And as she's following him, he like pops in, he talks to Greg Sanders. He goes to the AV lab. He gets the receptionist is giving him messages. And then he finally gets to the office, and you can see that Sarah's like, okay, great. Like, this is my chance to go talk to him. And then somebody else goes into the office. So she sort of, I don't want to say admits defeat, but she's just kind of like, okay, I guess like now isn't the right time. She gives up. And so she starts to head back towards where she was eating.
Before you have to dive into something much bigger.
Yes.
I want to say on the second watch through of this episode, knowing what happens at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. I was like, wait, is this supposed to be a metaphor for her chasing Grissom? And I was like, I can't not put that past the writers of the show.
Okay.
Yeah. The way they are, it's like, because it was such a weird scene. Or was it just supposed to be like, this is an important thing, and she's like, she's nervous. Like, the feeling of the scene is that she you could tell she wants to do something or go somewhere. And like,
yeah, but she's like trying to hype herself up. She's
hesitating. Like, there's almost like that. Yeah. Like, I want to do it, but I don't want to do it. I want to do it, but I don't want to do it.
For sure.
Mentality. And because of what's about to happen, it's supposed to be like sliding doors type metaphor, where it's like, is she going to miss her real opportunity because of what's about to happen? Which then would give weight at the end of the episode.
Yes.
When she actually does it. And it's like even in this situation, you know, she moved forward with something that was important to her. So I wasn't sure where they were going, but it just felt like she had this like following him around thing. And I was like, I don't know how this feels now that I know what she was trying to do. Like it felt differently.
Yeah.
Different. But, and I only say that because we end up with lines like, what's a single woman doing traveling alone in Vegas?
What is a single woman doing alone in Vegas? That's true. It kind of colors the rest of how one might interpret the scene. So as she is walking back, the lab explodes in like spectacular fashion.
Boom goes the dynamite.
After immediate post-explosion, Greg Sanders is on a stretcher. He's being wheeled out. He is being put into an ambulance. We see a lot of the other people who work in the lab are standing outside. They have like little cuts. So obviously like they were like in the nearby vicinity of the lab when it exploded. And Sarah is sitting on the curb in the parking lot. Grissom goes over to her. And as the intro states, I have seen this show 3 to 4 times. I don't think I have ever caught the fact that he refers to her as honey in this scene.
I don't think I caught it.
Ever. I only caught it because I have closed captioning on. I have subtitles on when I'm watching the episode. And he's saying, like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm all right. And I think he's saying, like, you know, I think you need to get that looked at. And she's like, oh, no, I'm good. And he literally is like, honey, like, we really need to, like, get you seen. And I was like, what?
I don't know how I feel about that. Because, like...
What? Because of what happens later in this episode?
Because if you aren't in a relationship, that's not appropriate.
It is not appropriate.
A girl, honey.
No. No, it is. Especially...
But it's cute if you think people are, like...
Especially someone who reports to you.
Yeah.
Like, that is an abuse of power if there's not clearly stated parameters.
The right word there was Sarah. Also, her hand is pretty gnarly.
Yeah, so she needs stitches. That's essentially how this scene ends. Well, not this scene ends up, but the scene between them in this incident ends up. But then this dude arrives, who we later learn is a director.
Also, I wanted Hank to be there in the ambulance.
So no. No. So screw good. Hank. We don't like Hank.
Well, exactly. Tension. Yeah, I know. Drama.
Yeah.
Raise the stakes. Make her think about the relationship that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But was it a relationship when he had a live-in girlfriend?
I mean, it was. It's because he's a liar and a cheater. doesn't negate her feelings.
No, right? No. Definitely right? Doesn't negate her.
That's what I mean. Like, in her mind, it was a real relationship.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
I mean, people can have more than one relationship. It's just cheating if you don't tell the other people.
Yes, Polly is a fair relationship model as long as everybody's on board and honest with one another.
Yeah.
So, not what Hank was doing, though.
And you could be Polly and you could cheat.
This is true. Those are not
exclusive things.
Those are not exclusive things by any stretch of the imagination. So this director shows up. He wants to know what Grissom did to his lab. And we'll definitely follow up with this angry director fellow a little bit later. Actually, we follow up with him right now. I put Grissom with boss question mark because I don't
have
call
we ever
him director.
Met this character?
I don't think so.
Okay. I was like, because there was we used to have like the sheriff guy all the time. And we've met, I think, the mayor. The mayor was retiring and the sheriff was running for mayor.
Yeah.
And I was like, have I met this person?
I don't think so.
I thought he was an FBI person.
And that's why I was like, and like, I will say that this is definitely a downvote for this episode. I feel like they should have taken a little bit to explain who this was much earlier in the episode. Like, they take way too long to explain who this person is, but the two of them are looking at the lab together and they're talking about a certain case. Oh, I don't know if I gave myself enough notes to actually remember what case, but
it was
Yes, they were talking about the actor who killed the two women.
Was that an episode from earlier this season? Because I couldn't remember.
Yes, it is a callback because I mentioned, I was like, oh, callback. Yes, it is. Hold on. Let me go to all episodes. I'll be able to, as soon as I see the name of the episode, I'm going to be like, yeah, it's that one. Let me go to season. I think it is season three. Is it season three? Yes, the season three, episode two, The Accused is Entitled.
Oh, yeah.
That is the one that they're referencing in this lovely little callback here. So we then have Jim Brass with Jason Kent. And I put smart lawyer because she's just like, my client's not going to talk. He's not going to say anything to you.
She's the best lawyer anyone's ever had.
I literally was like, Jason Kent and smart lawyer. And we do learn, though, that he is a recovering addict. He is on methadone. We also learn that his teeth are not real teeth. He just pulls his teeth out of his mouth, and one of them is missing.
This is almost like a little squiggy for me.
Because then they show the like the whatever the mechanism is to like
whatever's left
to put the teeth on. It was a little gruesome. It was a little gruesome there. I will say.
But just the idea of like losing is funny because I'm talking about earlier. I had a piece of tooth, but in general, the idea of like. Those dreams, you're like your teeth fall out.
Oh my god, those
like
are the I was literally just about to say. Have. I was like, those are the worst dreams because I wake up in a panic and I like I'm touching my mouth and then I'm like, oh no, I have my teeth. Like,
yep, I have. Those,
I hate I those
dream
dreams
all the time.
Those dreams are the worst.
I'm almost like numb to it because I've had it.
I maybe have it like once every few years. Like I don't have them that often, but they're not fun dreams. They're terrible dreams. But thankfully we. For the most part, we have our teeth inside of our mouth. We then have Nick with Archie. They're listening to the victim's recording. She had made some recordings. And Archie's like, kind of sounds like she's in love with Jason Kent. And Nick is like, I think she's a murder groupie. Like, all these murderers get women, and I think, like, she's on board with this.
We don't really come back to these recordings too much later. I thought they were going to play a much bigger part.
No, they play like a little bit of a part, yeah, which we'll mention in a little in a moment. Yeah. Actually, we'll mention it now. They play another recording of hers, and in this recording, she mentions Jesus Cardenas, and then they then pull up like a picture of Jesus, and this is my spot, the guest star.
Oh,
but here's where listeners and Nick weigh in. He's on a later episode of CSI.
Oh, it's like a
as a different character.
There's a lot of spot so guest stars.
So I recognize him. Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, I totally know him. And I'm like looking through his IMDb, and I'm like, no, I don't think I've seen that. And then I get to his CSI listing, and he has two CSI listings. And the other episode he's in, it's like a pretty Hallmark monumental episode. It's a very monumental episode, and he's like a pivotal role in this in that episode. And I was like, I know him from another CSI.
I think it counts.
So, I was like, does that count as a spot the guest star?
Didn't we have a different spot the guest star earlier this season? Yes. Where it's like, this person actually comes back as a regular.
Yes.
Like five seasons from now or whatever.
Yes.
And but they were just a B character.
A B.
So yeah, I think it counts.
Okay. All right. So this is
also because you didn't know what it was from.
I didn't. I just was like, oh, I totally recognize that guy. And then when I looked through and I saw that, I was like, oh, I was like, that is where I know him from. And this is, I have to get back to my IMDb page.
Antonio Ramos.
Ramos, yes. And so, yeah, I know. I'm not going to say the character or the episode, the leader, because I want, you know, I want to leave it as suspense for Nick going forward. It's quite a while later. It's a couple years later.
I opened his IMDb. So
now. Okay.
He's also in an episode of CSI Miami. He plays a character named Thiago Matos.
I've seen some episodes of CSI Miami, but not all of them. And definitely not like three or four times. So.
And he's in one episode of Burn Notice, which I've watched, but I don't recognize him from, so it wasn't as pivotal of a character.
Nope, I totally recognize him from later on being in...
He's in like one episode of like everything.
Yeah, he is.
He's definitely...
He has a very long list on his IMDb, so... We have Catherine Warwick. They are with Greg Sanders in his hospital room, and the only thing that he remembers that is out of place before the lab exploded is smelling burning plastic. So he smelled burning plastic, and that's like the only thing that he can really remember being like strange or out of place before the explosion happened.
I thought that was going to come back, including all the way at the end of the episode.
No, never really comes back.
Which I'll explain when we get there.
Okay. So we have Nick looking over visitor logs because Jesus is in prison. And Jason Kent was just in prison. And come to find out, Allison visited both Jason Kent and Jesus in prison.
Yep.
So Nick and Grissom have a little talk about this. They're like, that's weird that she is visiting a guy she's in love with Jason Kent, but she's visiting a guy that he hates. Like, that's very strange.
I will say later on, they will discuss as they show these visitations.
It's the next scene they show it.
Yeah. I do not get the impression that she like checked out and checked herself back in.
No.
And so like, I'm not really sure why she's on his visitor log. Cause if anybody was watching them, I don't know. Yeah. So I guess we'll get there. But so that was one of the things I was like,
Yeah. So literally the very next scene is Nick, Grissom, and Archie. They're watching the visitor footage. And for the most part, she just went, she visited Jason Kent. They sat there, they talked. But on the last two visits, she visited with Jason Kent. He left, she stayed behind. And then she met up with Jesus. And at least one of those occasions, she had sex with Jesus.
Yeah. So yeah, they went off to the corner just out of camera.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, she didn't like leave the room,
nope,
get checked back in. She just like went off with
behind
them. And I was like, why is she even on his visitor log?
I don't know.
Clearly, there's no one in the room monitoring them.
No, if you could just go off and do that, you're not being well monitored by any stretch.
Also, I really take the umbrage with the term medium security. This feels a lot like minimal security to me. But...
It's like pretty minimal security.
I know. Maybe there's some bribes going on here.
Maybe. I mean, could be. So we then have Warwick and Catherine. They're in the lab. They're gonna do a spiral with overlap to try to map the scene out. And then you have some loud music pumping.
This is our music. We've been getting these every few episodes.
And so there's no crater. They're like, you know, they're looking for signs of this explosion. There's no crater.
They say that, but that table looks like pretty bent for a metal table.
They're saying no crater, though. They don't think it's a high explosive. They're thinking it was a liquid. They realize that the hot plate was on. So that's definitely a component in this. And they find a developer pan. And so they're starting to think, is the developer pan plus the hot plate what caused this explosion?
Jason Kent's skinny nail clippers.
Yeah. So we'll come back. Well, sort of come back around to that near the end
they
of the
don't
episode.
Mention them.
They don't mention them specifically, but there's evidence about, or there's reference to lack of evidence because of the lab exploding.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And thus, yeah.
So I think the idea is you're supposed to think that we may have tried to DNA test the skin and the fingernails and look to see if there was. Although, quite frankly, there's a lot of reasons why Jason Kent could have had
her DNA underneath his fingernails
based on everything else that they've discussed.
This is true.
Consensually, I mean.
Consensually, yes. Very true. So then we're back with Sarah after assumingly getting stitched up. She is at her locker. She's kind of like looking at her ID. Nick stops in the doorway. He's like, hey, heading out to prison. Come join me.
Yeah, he's like, are you back on after your hospitalization?
And so in order to meet him outside, she has to walk by the lab, and she's essentially like experiencing a flashback as she's walking past the lab. So we kind of see the
ghost
explosion.
Yeah, the image ghost thing again. Yeah. Reminds me, they've used this a couple other times.
They have definitely used
this. Reminds me of the bus on the highway.
Oh, yes, the bus on the highway. That was
I think the first time.
Oh, best episode. We then have, they're at the prison. We're with Nick and Sarah. They're with Jesus. And he's like, yeah, I knew Allison well. Like, he's like, yeah, you saw the tape, right? Like, you know what's up. Like, you saw what happened.
I'm already in jail.
Like, what are you going to do? And he's letting them know about the buyer-seller situation in jail and how debts need to be paid. And Jason Kent thought maybe his debts didn't need to be paid because he was outside of jail. But that's just, like, not how the system works. So then we're with Sarah, Nick, and Grissom. They're having their own walk and talk. And while in prison, Kent was found with heroin on a few different occasions. So they're postulating, did the drugs come from Jesus? Hence, that's why he was in debt to Jesus. And then this is another, was this an all-male writer's room? Yes, it is. Okay, this is not shocking. So Nick, they're talking about the fact that Allison essentially had sex with Jesus to help pay off debts for Jason Kent, and Nick is like, oh my gosh, they passed around. And Sarah, of all people, is like, she passed herself around.
Yeah. Which they wouldn't know what happened or didn't happen. So she's just kind of like condemning her.
Sarah, I love you. You know that. I'm like almost always in your corner, but not on this one, girl. Like, I am not on your corner with this statement. I don't like it.
I think the insinuation is supposed to be like she like volunteered herself, but like, we don't actually have any idea what happened.
We have no idea what happened. And. Okay, maybe she didn't have a gun to her head to make her do it, but manipulating somebody that you love to do something that they don't want to do.
Or wouldn't otherwise do
is not okay. Like, let's not normalize this. So that's all I'm going to say before I go too far off the deep end on this one. So then Catherine and Warwick are with Hodges. And he's like, look, yep, the developer pan was mine, but I cleaned it. And if the hot plate was on, that's not my fault. It is, you know, it gets turned on by accident all the time. And he's starting to feel targeted. He's starting to feel like this is a targeted attack against him. And he's like, look, if you're going to listen to the lies and rumors from LA and come after me, I'll lawyer up if I have to. And Warwick is like, yeah, I would do that, essentially. And I was like, whoa, I know you guys didn't like Hodges, but I feel like this got targeted and mean really fast.
Yeah. And it's a little ironic when you think about the situation, like, you know, like, we're going to run you out of town. And I think Hodges is like, I'm going to lawyer up. And I'm like, he should still lawyer up because, like, this is sort of workplace harassment.
It's bordering on that, if not full on workplace harassment.
Especially once that report comes in.
Yep. But before we get more answers on that one, Grissom is back with Jackie and Prince, and the print on the victim's ankle is not Jason Kent's. It belongs to a Miguel, aka Mickey Dorado. So we then have Catherine. She has all these like overlays with different color markers on them. So she's plotting different like substances or elements that were found post explosion to see like where things were spread. Like how the explosion
dispersal.
Yes,
pattern.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
And they're like on transparencies.
Yes. Which so I she can like overlay them.
You'd have to be go to school before 2000 to know what that is, but there's clear plastic sheets.
Clear plastic sheets.
So she can overlay them over the map.
Of the map of the lab.
So that she can have a bunch of ones she can switch in and out and look at the same map because printers were expensive back then.
This is very true.
And printing out 5 maps would be
a lot.
Bankrupt the crime lab.
Yeah. Warwick enters and we learn through this conversation that the primary frag, thus like what caused the explosion, was the green glass. And dun dun dun, Catherine blew up the lab.
Flashback to the first scene with them, and she puts this weird thing inside of the flume hood and walks away. Yeah. I thought it was like days later. Sometimes I forget this episode in these episodes that this is supposed to be like all in one night.
All in one night. Yeah. So don't worry, listeners. We're not done with that storyline. But before we get back to that one, we're with Jim Brass, a few officers, and Sarah. They're at an apartment building. They are there to collect Mickey. And Jim Brass and the officers go in first to clear the scene. But Sarah doesn't wait. She goes in there and she finds Dorado. And Jim Brass is not happy about this.
No.
He is not A-OK with her behavior in this scene.
I even was like, wait, why is she like going in? Like,
she is not supposed to be.
That's not her job.
No.
She's there to process him or to collect evidence once they
safely have him in custody.
Yeah. However, Miguel Dorado is my next spot the guest star in this episode, who is played by, the actor's name is Raymond Cruz. Mm-hmm. Technically there was a flashback where he was in earlier, but in the blue light like of the murder scene.
Yes.
And I forgot the announcer box.
Yes, the announcer box, yeah.
I didn't really recognize him there, but here in the very bright lights where they interrogate him, which I guess maybe they don't do to, I don't know if it's immediately afterwards or if there's a scene in between, but it's really obvious. He plays Tuco in Breaking Bad, and he's only in 4 episodes. But this is like the antagonist of the first season. And then I didn't realize there's actually only 6 episodes in the first season of Breaking Bad, or 7.
Oh, so he's like in the majority.
So he's in the majority of the episodes, and he's the bad guy. And like the end of the episode, there's a big twist with him. And he's a very important foil in that show, in that first season of the show. And so and it's really not that much later. I think that show is filmed from this, so he looks very similar.
Yeah.
You know, he's still around the same age. So wait, I know who that is. And I know who he is. I couldn't remember the character's name, but I was like immediately like, that's the dude I first seen in Breaking Bad. Yeah, so Tuco in Breaking Bad, played by Raymond Cruz.
Yes. We'll come back to this character, but before we do, Grissom gets a call from the director, and so then he and Catherine are in his office, and this is where Catherine admits that she didn't follow procedure. The director wants to know why she didn't, and she's like, look, I'm working 16-hour days, and then I'm lying to my daughter that everything's going to be A-okay. Like, and I feel like, I mean, I haven't experienced what Catherine is going through, but I think everyone to some degree can relate to, I am feeling very overwhelmed. There's not enough time in the day. I made a mistake. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want me to do? I can't
unfix it.
I can't go back in time. So I don't know what you want me to do.
I have a question for you though. Mm. Since the director wasn't, I was in the impression the director was in other episodes.
Is this the only episode that he's in?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But he's very familiar because I guess at this point we have to call this a missed spot the guest star.
Okay.
He's the warden in Shawshank Redemption.
Oh my gosh, she is!
Which is like, what?
Whoa!
Which is, I knew that, but like, I was like, I don't remember. I even remember thinking like, I don't remember having this spot the guest star before, but I was like, I was thinking he was so familiar. I feel like I've almost seen him before. He's in a bunch of other stuff as
well. He's in a lot of other things.
But like, that's probably, you know, that's an Academy Award winning movie.
It's such a good movie.
Have heard of. And so that's maybe, he's also in 31 episodes of 24, which I have seen many, many seasons of 24. So maybe it's a later one. I don't remember him in 24 at all for some reason.
Yeah, I've never seen 24, so I don't know.
But my guess is he probably plays a similar role, director of something. Oh. You know, he's probably in the later seasons, which is probably why I don't know who he is. So he's a pretty big actor. So knowing that he's not maybe yet a series regular, if this is his first showing, that was kind of a missed spot the guest star on our part. So if you're listening at home, mm-hmm. you're like, I cannot believe you guys did not get this spot the guest star.
Those idiots.
Know that.
Missing this spot the guest star.
Know that. I know who that actor is. So I just thought he was a regular.
Spoiler alert. He's in one episode of CSI.
Oh, really? It's just this one.
It's just this one.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a double miss. Yeah. He's a true guest star.
Yeah. This would have been our one and only time to identify him. But he, in his one appearance here, he tells Catherine that she's on paid leave. She has 5 days on paid leave. And both Catherine and Grissom stand up to go. And the director's like, no. Like, we're done talking with her, but like, you need to stay. And there's been like a few references, I think, already in this, like, not direct references, but hints as to Grissom having issues with his hearing. But this is very obvious, wherein the director turns away from him and he's talking, and you can tell that he's trying to look at his lips and it's quiet. And so Grissom does the, like, say it to my face. Like, if you have something to say to me, you say it to my face. And so the guy's
very,
like, all right.
Grissom-like.
Yep. And the guy's like, okay. And he turns around and looks at Grissom directly and says what he wants to say. And essentially, he's like, you know, your responsibility is to protect the lab. And Grissom, great line from Grissom, is like, without the people, there is no lab. So, like, I need to watch out for my people, which, as a manager, that is also how I approach management. It's like, I got to protect, if my people aren't here, like, I can't get stuff done. So, like, I got to protect my people.
I will say, it's a good line, but I do want to climb back into my time machine.
Okay.
Go back and to the writer's room and say, the thing Grissom needs to say next is, you're worried about these 20 cases. Do you know how many more cases we would lose if we didn't have the team that we have today? You know, someone like Catherine on these cases, you'd lose three times as many cases.
Yeah.
So if you're all you're worried about is the number, like, really just like, if what you're really worried about is the numbers and not the people, then these people are good for your numbers, you know, but also I stand by my people.
So we then, we're with Nick. He's there at Mickey's apartment. He is also not happy with Sarah. He's like, what? Do you think you're indestructible? And this is another callback. He's like, have you ever had a gun drawn on you? Because he has.
Yep.
And I was like, there's a callback to a very early episode. I think that was season one that he had the gun drawn on him. It was season one or season two, I think. And she's like, nope. And then
I was trying to think, was somebody kidnapped or...
There's actually he had the gun drawn on him twice.
Yeah.
The first time was the episode where the woman killed the girlfriend and then married the guy, and they like find the creaky floorboards. And then as they're taking the husband out, thinking that he's the one that murdered his girlfriend, Nick is confronted by his wife who has the gun. And then he has the stalker. The guy that was like living in people's attics and
yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, but he has
two. Didn't they get shot at or something in that episode?
Did he get? I can't remember.
If
he did. Yeah, I don't remember either. But he's had a gun drawn on him twice. So Nick has been there and is like, "What are you doing? Like, that's not a position you want to put yourself in. Stop doing that." But as they're exploring the apartment, they realize that Mickey here was hiding heroin in the cash under George Washington.
Yeah, he was
like cutting George Washington's out.
$1 bill face. Yeah,
and then pacing it over another one.
Yeah, some other drugs.
Yeah. So we also learn in the scene that he has human bite marks on his head. And they're, without doing any molds, they're like, those are Jason Kent's. And I was like, how can you say that?
I think you're supposed to assume they would mold them.
But I was just like, guys, you can't just say that they're Jason Kent's. Like, you got to take a mold.
I mean, Grissom's seen those teeth up front. personal. It's true. He's held them in his hand.
It's true. It's true. But he's saying, look, 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 you know, I was there. I went to collect the debt. Like, I admit to that, but I did not kill her. Like, Jason killed her. Not me. Didn't do it.
I just dragged the body for some reason.
Yeah, for reasons unknown, I touched the body when I could have just left.
I didn't need the door to open all the way.
No, I could have slid out. I'm not a gigantic person. I could have made that work. But this brings us to Jim Brass and Grissom with Kent and Smart Lawyer. And this is where we see a reenactment wherein Jason Kent tried to offer Allison to Mickey. She refused. He then strangled her. And we also learn in the scene that evidently Jason Kent knows how to manipulate women because his lawyer is paying his rent.
Yeah, they like... Here's 3 seconds you could have cut, given us 3 more seconds of the strip, and we would have been at a 55 LV score. What is the whole point of Jim Brass being like, oh, you know, you've been paying his rent all along or something? Like,
I think the point is that he's a manipulator.
Yeah. Is he also sleeping with the lady?
I think so. I think that's the idea, is that like he has multiple murder groupies and his lawyer is one of his murder groupies.
Yeah, I think they did not enough of a good job sort of like making that a plot line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just like putting in that's what I mean. Like it should have just been cut, edited out.
Yeah, because they didn't give it enough time to like actually like expound upon it. Yeah. We also learn in the scene that his hand span is 22 centimeters, which is the exact hand span of the hand that strangled Allison.
I would like to bring up my final spot, the guest star.
Ooh, all right, let's do it.
Which is the ruler. of which I am holding the exact same ruler. The letters are completely faded off. It used to have the same cork backing as in it, which was what made me realize it. And I'm sure there were like 5 brands, 10 brands, 20 brands using this ruler. It probably from the same mass market manufacturer.
Yeah.
But I just like could tell it was the same one, even the way the little hole is punched in it, or it's at least the same design. But I've had this since sophomore year for geometry math class. And it's funny
should I have gotten you a new ruler for Christmas?
No, I have a newer ruler, which I do use for measuring things.
Okay, and good. Because I was now like, this why? Ruler
is a back scratcher, is pretty much its primary function.
That's fair.
It's very flexible.
That's fair.
It's good. But it was so funny because I was like, I saw the ruler, I was like, that is basically the same ruler, like the dimension, everything is like, whether it's copycat design or whatever, I was like, I know that ruler intimately. It has lived on my desk for decades.
That's so funny. You're like, I know that ruler. I've met that ruler before.
Spot the guest ruler.
So he gets escorted out. Grissom and Jim Brass are talking in the hallway and they're agreeing that he's gonna walk, that the evidence that they had in the lab exploded, and literally all they have is that his hand span is the same hand span that killed the victim. So and he's gonna walk.
Like, you gotta also realize, like, there's a lot of work you have to go into with the hand position and extrapolating a hand span.
Yeah.
And the sort of very unscientific idea of like opening and closing your hand, it's very much glove doesn't fit, you must acquit type situation.
Yeah, and the only quote-unquote evidence that they have is a like known drug dealer / gang member who witnessed the murder, if Mickey even wants to testify.
Yeah,
right. And if Mickey's even willing to testify, which there's a good chance he's gonna be like, nope.
Yeah.
not gonna testify.
Snitching is not a
strong
character.
Nope.
Aspect of career criminals.
Yeah, exactly. Catherine is then, she does a return visit to Greg Sanders in the hospital, and it's because she wanted Greg Sanders to hear directly from her what happened in the lab. So we cut away before we hear her actually say it, but she wanted to talk to him directly, which I appreciated.
To bring it back, I thought Greg Sanders was going to be like, yeah, I know. I told you I smelled the plastic. I turned around and saw the evidence you left in the field. I just wasn't going to throw you under the bus.
Right, because I'm a good person.
Because I'm a team member. Because I'm one of you guys.
I'm one of you guys.
Not one of the lab guys.
No. I want to be a CSI. I want to be out there in the field with you. Yeah. But when you get exploded anyway, I might as well be out in the field getting exploded.
While I'm time traveling to fix the other thing, I'll sprinkle that one. Alternative universe out there.
Yeah.
Enjoy your better episode.
We don't end there, though. We have our final scene. Grissom is is looking at a Rolodex and presumably looking at a doctor for his hearing.
He pulls out a card. It says ENT on it, ear, nose, throat doctor. Yeah, would be so an otolaryngologist.
Yeah, so that's
person to help him.
Yeah, but before he can make that phone call, Sarah's at the doorway. They're having a bit of a conversation. He also brings up her recklessness at the apprehension of Mickey, but that's not what she's focused on at the moment. What she's focused on is asking Grissom to dinner, and he says no. And then she kind of pushes it, but it's kind of like, come on, like, let's see where this goes, like, let's just go get dinner. And he's
I like how they say, like, see where this goes. I, as a first time watcher of this show, do not think they have done a really good job setting up the tension between these two characters. Like, it's there.
It's there.
There's a little bit of it, but not like a, what are we doing dancing around that, like, it's not, we're not in Ross and Rachel territory here.
Oh, no, definitely.
You know, we're like, they're just like, it's important because it's like, okay, you like a guy, but he's your boss. You know, it's like, it's just not appropriate to pursue a relationship with somebody who is your supervisor, or for your supervisor to pursue a relationship with somebody who's their subordinate. It's one thing to be like, you know, if you were in a relationship with somebody, could they become your supervisor? Like, that's a very different situation than, like, right now we're just friends and, like, we've never even been on a date.
Right.
Why going on a date is not the right idea. So, and we're not spending time together outside of work. So it's not like our relationship has grown from much more than working together. So it's like, you know, and people, they can develop feelings for each other in all sorts of situations.
Of course.
I don't want to sell that down, but, like, it's not, like, wild that Grissom is like, no.
Yeah, he says no, and then not that he backtracks on the no, he doesn't. But instead of just holding firm with the no, he then transitions to, like, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the what you do about this is no. Like, you are her boss. She's now also starting to display, like, reckless behaviors. Like, this is not a good time to be like, yeah, like, let's see where this is, you know. And she's just like, okay, but, like, by the time you figure it out, it might be too late.
Yeah, Hank might be back.
I mean, maybe Hank will come back. Let's not.
See, imagine the tension that would have set up if she walked out and then went on a date with Hank.
she has more self-esteem.
That's true.
Than to take Hank.
I really am giving Hank too much credit.
You're giving Hank way too much credit.
Yeah, that's true. I keep forgetting that they didn't break up, that he cheated on her.
He cheated. He had a girlfriend the entire time they were dating.
Yeah, it's like, he didn't even cheat on her. He cheated on his fiance
with her
and just kept it from her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So that is, in fact, the end of our episode. Hank. Not involved
Hank
whatsoever.
Pettigrew.
So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I like the episode. I think a lot of that is being carried on the shoulders of the character. Like, this is a 5 out of 5 character episode for me.
Yes. Yeah.
There is so much here, and there's a lot of different pieces, and they're all very well done in general, right? You've got Catherine in the explosion, the lab. You've got, you know, hits of Lindsay. You've got, you know, Greg Sanders is basically in a stretcher the whole episode, but, like, you know, you have that sort of humanizing story and the relationships people have. You've got plenty going on with Grissom and Sarah.
Grissom and his hearing.
You know, Nick and Sarah, like, you know, you know, a lot of great moments, I think, across the board. So, but storylines are a little lacking. Your B storyline, it's kind of a cool storyline. I feel like I would have preferred there be, like, maybe a better red herring than this developer pan, because I don't know about you, but I think we were supposed to know it was Catherine's fault the whole time. And I would have liked that to be more stated, like a oh wow moment, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it could have been something where, instead of showing her putting in the fume hood, he just said, well, just stick it in the lab or something, right?
Yeah.
And then had a flashback later on where they showed her sticking in the fume hood.
Yeah.
But that being said, that certainly carries there. I give it a play. I'm not sure. I think if it was a little better, it would have been a replay and it would have been a 4 out of 5. But instead, I stuck on a 3.5. But that is, as I said, it's 5 out of 5 for the story. It's just, it's kind of weaker. It's really like a 3 on the crime scene investigation part. But that is the name of your show. Mm-hmm. And if you can't bring that, then, you know, you need that to carry the episode. So maybe probably a little harsher you know, I feel like after reviewing it, it's like, I did like this episode quite a bit. So maybe being a little harsher and holding off on giving it a 4, I probably should have given it a 4, but I already wrote it down. I'm not going back. So we're sticking at a 3.5.
All right. I think I will also say 3.5 for much the same reasons. Like character development, yes. Chef's kiss. Give me all the... We finally circle back to like what's going on with Lindsay and how and the after effects of Eddie's death on Catherine and how much she has to like work. And now there's like nannies involved because Eddie was watching Lindsay for some of the time. Right. And that dynamic is gone now. And, you know, seeing three different characters call Sarah out for her recklessness was like an interesting point in the story. Like you see how Jim Brass interacts with her, how Nick interacts with her, how Grissom interacts with her. Obviously, we like finally have the quiet part said out loud about how Sarah feels about Grissom. There's been a lot of like hints about like maybe something's going on here, but they really haven't been deliberate about it. And this was the like, okay, if you haven't picked up on like the hints that we've been dropping for a little while, like here you go. We're gonna like come towards the end of season 3 with this. But I also agree that the storylines were just. They were all right. They weren't bad.
Yeah.
But they weren't great. It was all right.
If you got that main storyline to like one of the better storylines this season, like there's basically no world in which this is like a 4.5. It would just like catapult it to a 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's like, cause it's just like, it's too crucial of a piece for it to not be great. It really just had to be a little bit better than it was. For this to be a much better episode, but and then I probably would have been a replay because I would have been like, yeah, of course you watch this episode twice. CSI episode part is great, the character part is great. You know, of course I'd watch it again. So, but to see them nail that, you know, we're late in the season. I wish maybe we got more of this earlier on, but they're doing a good job of it, and that makes me very excited for future seasons, right? Because I think that, you know, they've at least started to figure out how to work it all together, like how to layer the episodes. So it's just kind of a silly, I don't know. It's sort of like the murder itself is kind of silly. And maybe it would have been cool if they got him. I honestly think if they would have figured out a way to like get him more than a handprint.
Yeah, that would have left you feeling better.
Could have changed the whole thing. Yeah, at first you kind of wanted him to be innocent. Like redemption.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. And then when
you're like, okay, well, he's going to be the bad guy. Well, now, why'd you get him?
Yeah, I think for me, had they spent more time on the lawyer's involvement, that would have helped push it over for me.
Yeah, yeah.
They sort of hit that like she's been helping him out, and maybe she's been doing some like shady things to help him like cover up dirty crimes that he's involved with. But they don't. They like throw it in there as like a quick little line, and then they just like move right away from it. And I'm like, oh, that could have been a fun, you know, like if he just essentially, you know, was a more of a Manson character and, you know, had like pulled all these people into like a weird culty sort of thing. That would have been kind of neat.
Ready? Here's the last change in the time machine. I don't think I've ever done this where I've said I'm going to rewrite the end of an episode. After the scene, like, well, he's like, oh, well, you've got it as a handprint. That's really not going to do it or something, right? Have it be like something like, well, since you're paying his rent, we figured you were paying other things. And so then we pulled your cell phone and realized you had a second cell phone that called your first cell phone moments after the death or something, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or something like, I don't know, just like another piece of evidence, another nail in the coffin, have it tie back to her and that whole thing. Then you would have felt like, you know, maybe she would flip on him.
Yeah.
I don't know if she can, because whatever, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, something cool like that, just to give a little like.
Yeah, a little something thing. More.
Also, here's the other problem. We literally just had an episode where it's like, oh, they're probably going to, the mom is probably going to get away with it.
Oh yeah, that is right. Our last episode.
It makes you want closure.
Yeah.
And there was one like two episodes before that. There have been way too many them getting away with it episodes at the end of the season.
You like your closure. You like your storylines with your set closure.
You've invested me. You've made me invested. Like every once in a while, you're allowed to be like, they get away with it. But like, you can't pile them all together.
No, that's I can understand. So yeah, I'm there with you. I think a 3.5 is. So we'll see if it jumps up a notch, a star or so, when we return next week to review season 3, episode 23, Inside the Box. In the meantime, you can support us on Patreon at whoareyou:acsipodcast. You can find us on Facebook the same way. We are also on Instagram, Twitter/X. See how much longer. And Blue Sky at whoareyoucsipod. And we also have a website, whoareyoucsipod.com, if you want to go out there and check it out. So, but otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
Also, this episode will probably be coming out around the holidays. So happy holidays to
This episode will drop December 23rd.
Perfect. Yeah. So everybody have a great holiday season.
Yeah. And thanks for another year with us, guys.
Yeah. Sticking it out. Yeah. It's end of 2024. Yeah. And we'll see you next year. In the meantime, no spoilers.
No spoilers.